You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
Just flow out with the music, you punk. Oh, good evening, everybody. 7.03 p.m. on the East Coast.
Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see.
Be singing this to myself. All summer, we're after the same rainbow's end, and it's finally hit. It's nice and hot over here. We are without air conditioning over here at the studio for now. I think we're going to take care of that tonight. We're going to figure out what we're buying tonight. We're putting in the orders. We're just going to bite the bullet, and there you go. And then all that will be done with. But welcome to the show. This is, quite frankly, we're kicking off. Well, no, we're not kicking off the week. Gypsy kicked off the week last night. He was the only one to go live from this stifling studio. So you can check out the Hangover Takeover archive show from last night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Gypsy and Juju did it. And, but, you know, aside from that, how did you spend your Memorial Day? Call in, you can tell us about it. What did we do? We took advantage of the sun that we got over here. It pretty much all existed between about 12 p.m. and about 4 p.m. Then the clouds rolled in, and we thought we were going to get railed by rain, but it didn't happen. But once the clouds came rolled in. And we were done with the outside. We all went into the living room, my apartment, from the backyard. And we started watching Band of Brothers, HBO. Now, I wanted to watch Saving Private Ryan because with the time that we had, we could have watched the entire movie. Instead, we took two episodes out of a 12-part miniseries that, I mean, God knows we're going to have time to finish it now. But if you haven't seen Band of Brothers, I would definitely recommend that. Obviously, I would also recommend Saving Private Ryan. And then we watched Homeland. Now, me and Lauren are trying to get the whole crew caught up with Homeland. And everybody seems to really be liking it. And we are in the middle of Season 3 now. Season 3, I think Episode 4 we left off with. So next time we have to check out Episode 5. So Lauren and I actually stopped watching Homeland in the middle of Season 5 to get everybody caught up. So there are still parts of Season 5 we have not seen yet, namely the end of it. So if you haven't seen Homeland, also check that out. It's a great one. Although I think it's funny because whenever I talked to whenever I did bring it up with my buddy Alex Plitzis, who's been on this show quite a bit, and he's his expertise is in dealings. The dealings of the Department of Defense and counterterrorism and all that stuff. And he said he turned it off after 15 minutes. He thought it was ridiculous. Which, you know, I'd have to imagine it to be ridiculous in a purely, like, this is real life kind of sense. But, you know, I wonder how real you're able to get it. And how boring things really are. Got to make it interesting. So in either case, the Skype is on, Zen Live TV. Let's see who's in the chat room. Moonlit Matt, Nikki, Rumble and Roar, Frankie Castle, Mixer Master Mao. Sup, guys? Couple of anonymous folk. Call in at any time and just do your thing. We're gonna have to get ourselves nice and warmed up to another week. What else can I say about this week before we get into other things? Oh God, I threw up today. I'll probably talk about this on Zaraz in New York again tonight at 9 o'clock, if we even have it. I don't even know. That's another thing. I'll get back to the throw up. I saw a little bit of Bryan Cranston playing LBJ in that new HBO movie. I have to assume that it's a movie and not a miniseries, because when I saw the listing of it last night, it was on from 10 to like 12:15. So I can't imagine that is a premiere of anything. It had to just be an HBO film. But so far, pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. I only saw about 20 minutes of it, and then I was just so tired last night. I didn't stay up past 11 last night. I just conked out. So check that out too. That looks pretty damn interesting. I don't even know what the name of it is, but Bryan Cranston of Malcolm in the Middle and Breaking Bad and Godzilla, of course, plays Lyndon Johnson. So I got to check that out in its entirety. And what else am I watching? I'm in the middle of watching that documentary on the 60s. It's like, I think it's a series on the 60s that you can get on Netflix. And I also watched over the weekend this documentary on Netflix from about 2013 or something you can check out that I would suggest everybody put on their list. It's called I Know That Voice. And it's a documentary on voice actors and animation and, just the background, the history of it all, voiceover with animation, cartoon greats like Mel Blanc and everything like that. There's amazing tidbits of American entertainment and just history in general in there, both media history, music. There's great things in there. Check it out. And just to watch people do all these imitations, and not so much imitations, but to do different type of voice work, to bring characters to life, a new wave of voice actors that have taken over for legends like Mel Blanc, people who do the Porky Pigs of the new generation, who do the Daffy Ducks and the Sylvester the Cats and all that. Check it out. Seriously. Some good stuff there. So I was happy with that. And just in case you thought I spent the entire weekend watching documentaries, I also did a lot of yard work. And I also had a pretty intense workout on Saturday outside, in which I lost at least a gallon of fluids. And my abs and hamstrings are still destroyed. It's been very hard to laugh the last couple of days. So just putting that out there. What else has happened in the country since we last got on? Well, we had this gorilla. Okay, a lot of people are up in arms about the gorilla that got killed. Hold on, I have the entire thing here. Cincinnati Zoo, this is from dailymail.co.uk. He didn't beat his chest. An animal expert says Harambe, the gorilla knew boy fell into the enclosure was defenseless and would never have attacked him. The gorilla Harambe shot dead in Cincinnati Zoo when boy fell into his area. The staff at the U.S. Zoo were concerned the gorilla would hurt the boy, age 3 or 4, whatever it is. An Australian animal expert doesn't believe the 180-kilogram gorilla was a threat. Outrage erupted after gorilla was killed and people blamed the boy's parents, which rightfully so. Rightfully so, to be honest. To be totally honest, that is where I lay with this. The more I cover the news, everybody, the more I see the nobility in the lives of animals than I do humans. Not to say that humankind is without nobility. I mean, look at the people that hang out with us on this show and all of our immediate friends and colleagues over here. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, the world is not showing us very pretty things here. The political sphere is not showing us very pretty things here. It's actually showing us that humans, especially when put into larger groups, lose their ability to think. They completely become detached from their critical thinking faculties, and that is it. It's the end of everything. You can sell them anything. You can create any kind of narrative. And when they lock onto that narrative and when they pledge, they give their blood oath, when they become made men and women of whatever kind of organization that has suckered them in and pulled them in, then they are open to the most baffling types of contradiction you'll ever see in your lifetime. New precedents of contradiction and hypocrisy. New precedents. New precedents every day. Every day somebody takes a stance that contradicts something that they said even 10 minutes ago. Every day. And that's not good. That's fine. That's fine because logic is the enemy. Logic is the enemy. Now, what's the logical? What's the facts about this? This boy apparently wanted to see the gorilla, and he's a 3 year old. There was about a 3 or 4 foot concrete wall, and then about a 4 foot hedge in front of it, because apparently there's a move to make zoos a little bit less, you know, jail cell-y and a little bit more natural. They want it to look a little bit more natural and authentic. So, I mean, you tell me whose responsibility it is when a kid is on top of a concrete wall that, you know, he wasn't. I mean, how the hell did he get up there? Without a doubt, he was put up there by somebody, by the mother that then turned her attention away to somebody else, because I think she was a teacher or something. I don't care. The details of this are really stupid because it doesn't matter to me of getting anything really, you know, getting down to a science in this, because this story will be gone in a day or two. Okay? But whenever something gets really, really heated and there's not really anything going on in the news, gotta take a look at what the hell's going on here. I blame the mother 100%. And for her to be screaming, right here, mommy loves you, mommy's right here, screaming from on top of the wall. No, mommy's not there. Mommy's on top of the wall where the kids should be. You know, jump in. Go ahead, jump in. Save your kid. Because the mommy probably started tweeting as soon as she put the kid up on the ledge. I really don't give a shit about this. I really don't care about the apologizing and all that stuff. I think that contemporary parenting is absolutely atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. I think it is the most hands-off, shucks, oh well type of thing there is. I think there are so many selfish parents out there in this new generation of parents. So many. I see it all the time. It's all around you. I know it's irresponsible to take a sample from, you know, from around you, your current area, the area that you're in, and then, you know, presenting that as evidence. I'm not presenting it as bona fide evidence. I'm telling you why I feel the way I feel, because what I see. Even as simple as when I, first of all, a lot of weird contradictions. You either have the parents that do not give a shit at all, or you have the parents that give a shit way too much. And the logical, the rational ones, the level-headed ones that are stern, that are educational, that promote a healthy way of thinking through a problem and not doing the thinking for the kid, they are becoming few and far between. I train a lot of my clients, my personal training clients, in this park, same park that I do a lot of my Little League coaching. And in that park, I mean, I see it all the time. I see it all the time. Parents walking with their kids through the bike paths and all that stuff. The kids asking the parents questions. The parents grunting or not answering at all because they're looking down at their phone. Just pushing. I'm doing my duty. What, honey? And like when they get snapped out of their social media trance, it's what, honey? With with the quirked eyebrows, like, wait, why are you bothering me again? What is this? Poor kids. Listen, human beings at any age are pretty receptive. Especially when you don't understand the language. All you have are energy receptors. You can tell when somebody doesn't want to be bothered by you. You can tell when there is a cold front there. You can tell when someone doesn't want to be bothered. I see it all the time. And then on the opposite side, on the opposite side of the spectrum, when you have the parents that don't give a shit at all, you have the parents that, and I have seen this. I took a picture of it from far distance and I sent it to a buddy of mine. I seen a parent in that same park letting the dog run free, which you're not even supposed to have dogs in the park, while the child, this actually I think it was a grandparent, I remember them being older, while the child was on a 6-foot leash and a body harness. The dog ran free in the park and the child was on a 6-foot leash and a body harness. So, you know, as far as the gorilla goes, I really do feel badly for the gorilla. I feel badly for the gorilla, and I feel badly for the child for having parents that he has. And of course, the mindless Neanderthals of the world did not waste any time to make it racial before they found out that not only the kid, but both the parents were black. This is from Belly Gangsta Boo on Tumblr, and of course this was parroted by thousands on Twitter, because you have to follow the hashtags if you want to see what the public's actually saying, okay? And is this something to really just consider. And this will also, think about this also when you read about this. How many times, whenever there's some sort of a tragedy, do you think that people out there are either crossing their fingers that the perpetrator or the victim is either black and white for any of their, of the sake of their own narratives? You know? Every time there is a shooter, I hold my breath, and I hope to God. Because obviously, it doesn't even matter. You remember we used to hope that things didn't happen altogether? Well, I stopped doing that because I know humans are just going to be humans. Bad things are going to happen. So I don't even wish for that anymore because I know it's just a waste of breath. But once things already happen and there's nothing to do to take it back, I hold my breath and I tense up, waiting to see what the color of the shooter was. What the color of the victim was. What the color of... It's sick. It's sick. And it's gotten into everything. That was the whole purpose of this. That is the whole purpose of this. But in either case, Belly Gangsta Boo said, "They did not have to kill that gorilla. The mother should be held responsible. Another example of white privilege. It would have never been a black child. It would never have been a black child, but if it was, there would be outrage about how it happened and the cause of the death of an innocent gorilla that wasn't even trying to hurt the child. Why weren't there any tranquilizers?" Well, not only is this dumb Neanderthal, this dumb Neanderthal, and I tagged them in a response post, and hopefully they know that I think they are Neanderthal, complete cave person. Anybody knows from any number of the little children inside of zoo cages incidents, or anybody you've heard, any kind of a professional that has been wheeled out there to make comment on something like this, will tell you that the shooting, when you shoot a animal like a gorilla, that will be resistant to the tranquilizers at first. That is such a huge, powerful, hulking beast. That the actual initial the impact from the tranquilizer darts would actually be more of an irritation, more of a frustration, and more of a scaring, okay, a frightening situation for the animal to actually make it want to get violent before it actually conks out and goes to sleep. Let's forget about the fact that she was only making the ridiculous debunked tranquilizer argument because she assumed that a boy that was going to the zoo and fell in could have only been white if they shot the gorilla to save the boy. It could have only been a white child. You see how sick that is? How sick that is. That is nothing less than mental illness. Nothing less than mental illness. Don't be fooled. Nothing less than mental illness. And it wasn't, oh, well, listen, it more 9 times out of 10, it would have been. Stop it. Stop it. There's no rationalization. You are not a critically thinking person anymore. You do not belong in conversation with other critical thinking, and which is why birds of a feather, as always, flock together, and you have these crazy little rabbles that call themselves different things. They anoint themselves with hashtags that are their own. They make up some kind of supremacy theory about how they were once oppressed, but they're really the uncrowned kings and queens of subjects that never ever will follow them. Got a bunch of kings and queens and bosses out there that are running around. Kings and queens and princesses of kingdoms of people who don't even know they're under their rule. Can you imagine that? Bunch of people. You looked at it, and here's what these type of people, the Betty Gangsta Boo, whatever the hell, Belly Gangsta Boo asshole. Same type of person that shows up to DePaul University when Milo Yiannopoulos was doing his thing last week and sits up there talking about oppression, but so smug and smirking and happy and smarmy and willing to comfortable enough to threaten violence into microphones, screaming at people who were supposed to have the stage, that they have now stolen the stage from them, and the paid security is not allowed to take them off the stage because it would be endangering and in disrupting their First Amendment rights. Forget about the people who go and pay to see these things, okay? And the money that has to be put forward for the security. But they stand up there, they walk back and forth, they don't care, they believe they belong to be there. They believe in their cause, and they know they won't be touched. Does that seem like somebody who's oppressed to you? Does that look like an oppressed person to you? Hell no. That is a privileged person. That's a special interest group. That is a protected class. Someone who gets up on stage and disrupts a meeting of people who paid to be there, who paid for the security, and has taken away with utter confidence, taken away other people's right to assemble and speak peacefully and exchange ideas. They have taken away that right. They have put themselves first, and they smile about it because they know nobody will dare touch them, because if they do, then there will be a racist hate crime at DePaul, and the media will line up to talk about the terrible security guards that dragged these Neanderthals off stage, just like the media lined up to talk about those terrible cops that broke up the pool party that was not supposed to be going on down in wherever it was, down south last year or 2 years ago, where you had to rent time, but the kids just stormed the pool. And then, of course, what are you going to do? They're already there. Now, if you ask them to leave and they don't leave, what are you going to do? They said no to you. I guess you just got to walk away, because if you escalate it any step further, it's a hate crime. I don't know how you guys were raised, but I wasn't raised through appeasement. I'm sorry. I wasn't raised through appeasement. And appeasement never works, because that's the inch that is given from which a mile is taken. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I know we report on the police state all the time. whenever something comes up that is newsworthy, and I'm always sharing things. Obviously, we only have an hour, but if you follow my Tumblr, you follow Tyranny Response Team on Facebook. I mean, we put up police brutality and police overreach, government overreach news and headlines all the time. But as I will always say, I am a staunch advocate of rule of law and enforcement of rule of law. 100%. 100%. And these maniacs, from top to bottom, man. From top to bottom. Starting with the gorilla, and everybody's jumping to conclusions, and here we are. Oh, with that being said, we move on to other topics. First of all, you can call in. Tell me what you think about the gorilla and all that stuff. Harambe. Who do you think is at fault? Zen Live TV. It's pretty much the URL that you're on right now without the dot. So Skype in, for Christ's sake. Skype in. Let me see here. I had a couple other things I wanted to bring up. Katie Couric says she's sorry for her misleading edit in the guns rights documentary, which I only saw snippets of it because why even waste time? Did you really think that Katie Couric was going to be part of a level-headed, even unbiased depiction of gun rights? Which brings up the other thing, that amazing thing. Anybody that was on Tumblr today and saw the public ask about gun safety? They wanted to know, you can ask a gun expert on safety. Just like last week, Tumblr wanted everybody to ask mental health experts questions. I thought that was hilarious. Tumblr and mental health, where it's an incubator for insanity. It's an incubator. All of the socio-political premature babies are sent to Tumblr to gain sustenance and grow into someone who can go and survive on the streets on their own with terrible ideas. That's it. Those are the intellectual preemies. All the intellectual preemies are sent to the Tumblr incubator. Remember that. And here we go. I want to bring this one up too. In this late hour. Tech giants. This is from Bloomberg.com. Tech giants vow to tackle online hate speech within 24 hours. Tell me, guys, what kind of hate speech you think is going to be tackled? U.S. internet giants Facebook, Twitter, Google, and Microsoft Corp. pledged to tackle online hate speech in less than 24 hours as part of a joint commitment with the European Union to combat the use of social media by terrorists. Okay. So right off the bat, let's think about this. If you have... Think about what is hate speech today. Okay, you thinking about it? What is hate speech today? Well, if you ask Trigglypuff and any of the freaks that show up to any of the demonstrations on college campuses, they would say anything that they don't agree with or any opinion that they don't share. So when you take hate speech, this ubiquitous topic, this hate speech that can be interpreted in so many ways by whoever wants to wield it as a weapon of censoring somebody that they don't like, and then you start saying that U.S. tech giants and the European Union want to start combating hate speech as a part of a joint commitment to fight terrorists, you're then lumping people who engage in what you would define arbitrarily as hate speech as terrorists. And now we are diluting what is actually terrorism. we're diluting now what terrorism is. It's bad enough that the word racist and all the other ists and isms have zero meaning anymore because of how easily and how frequently they're put around. But now we're going to start getting on. We're going to start. You watch the people who are going to be labeled terrorists. It's going to be the people who are going after terrorists. Joining us right now is our good buddy Luke. I think it's Mixmaster Mao. What's going on, brother?
Oh, hey, can you hear me?
Of course, welcome.
Okay, good. Yeah, this is coming. This is coming, like, the EU, of course the fucking EU would do this.
Where are you from? Are you from the U.S.?
Oh, no, I was born in, I don't want to give too many details out, but I was born in Canada.
Gotcha.
First 2 years of my life, lived in Canada, my mom's Canadian. But I've lived in the UK ever since we moved back to the UK.
I was going to say, because you have a little bit of a...
A little bit of a Canadian accent, I know. It stuck with me all my life.
It's crazy, but it's a little bit of a Canadian accent, but there is some UK there, too. So it's like I have to know a little bit about his background.
It's funny, because I talk to British people, and they think I'm American or Canadian. I talk to Canadians, they think I'm British. I have no identity.
That's it.
I'm a mongrel.
You're a man without a country.
I consider myself completely British at this point. Anyway, back to the EU stuff. Yeah, of course they fucking do this. And what point are they just going to start saying, oh, criticism of the EU migrant policy, you know, the migrant crisis. They're going to start saying, oh, that's hate speech now. Can't criticize that.
Yep.
Can't talk about this shit online. The internet was supposed to be the best place for a marketplace of ideas, for freedom of speech. It's going to liberate us so we could talk about shit. And now it ain't. And now it's just going back. Because you know why? Because in the United States, and I've talked about this here before. Actually, no, I was going to ask you something, or ask the patriotic Americans here. So yes, that's beside the point.
Yep.
America has all the protections for free speech. You guys have the First Amendment. Does Europe have anything comparable to the First Amendment? No.
No.
No. No.
Actually, I don't know anything about UK in particular, but I never really heard of anything about the EU in general as far as that goes. And as far as what you're seeing right now I think it's really great. It's probably like a doubling down now, because obviously we're watching the rejection of this ongoing migrant crisis by the people of the EU, of the respective European countries. And of course, those who are becoming a little bit more nationalist and who are seeing what the damage this can cause are being labeled as racist and xenophobes.
Oh, yeah.
This is the perfect way of declaring that not the migrants that are coming in and committing crime and are creating their own little ghettoized unions of no-go zones where law really does not exist or anything like that. It has nothing to do with that. They're attacking the people who are seeing their borders, their language, and their culture being diluted.
Oh, yeah. See, what was the guy's name? Jesse Phillips, the Eagles of Death guy who was at the Bataclan when the Paris attack happened, the American that was playing there.
Yeah.
And now he's been banned from other music festivals in France for speaking out.
Yeah.
The actual victims here are the ones being punished. It's a horrible situation. I don't know how it can even continue. But what interests me for this particular is, because this happens while, you know, EU referendum's coming up, I want to see how this impacts it. Because hopefully, if Leave brings this up, like if the Leave campaign brings this up, they'd probably just be slandered as racist. I hope that doesn't cost them the campaign. So I'm paying attention to this, you know.
See, I want to get the code of conduct arrives at Europe comes to terms with the bloody attacks in Paris and Brussels by the Islamic State, which has used the web and social media to spread its message of hate against its enemies. The company said it remains a challenge to strike the right balance between freedom of expression and hate speech in the self-generated content online platform. Wait a second, you're telling me that there's a delicate balance between freedom of expression and hate speech? When somebody is organizing, somebody is trying to organize and or condone and celebrate the death of other people because of some kind of religious, political agenda that they have, which is what drives terrorism, that is a lot different from somebody trying to debate policy or whether or not an immigration approach is healthy for a country. What are you talking about? Because over here in the U.S., thank God we have our First Amendment, talking policy is hate speech these days. You can only talk about your feelings. That's all. So it's really, really, it's sick to see this come out, especially with Bloomberg on Bloomberg, because you know what's going to be happening. If they need to review everything that's being said and make a decision on whether or not to let it fly or let it lie for within 24 hours, there's going to be so much debate stifled during key election times. Can you imagine what's going to be happening on election days? On election days?
Across Europe, like it, or actually no, I'm a little confused. Is this going to affect Americans as well? Because I know it's Facebook and Twitter, but
totally will.
Oh Jesus!
Totally will. This is that you have to understand. This is not anything. I really don't. I think that, you know, we Americans, especially the patriotic ones and the ones who really are reverent of our history, we know what similarities and differences we have with Europeans. And for a long time, it was, yeah, America first, and ha-ha, fuck you, Europe. We did it better. You know, and it was kind of like friendly camaraderie, but we knew where we came from, and we wanted to do something different. I do believe that these centuries later, the way that both the EU and America are being abused by the political elite, by this globalist push.
The fucking globalists.
Globalist, progressive left push that is on every continent, probably including Antarctica. We don't even know about it. This push is going to bring all of us on the same page again. And or at least I pray for that. Because this is not going to be left out of the loop for Americans over here, especially with 2016 coming up and what we were talking about, hate speech and all this shit. Dude, the hate speech stuff and the safe spaces stuff, that is like it's an American thing right now. It's a pastime.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget, but speaking of which, Milo, he's doing a stream down talk at UCLA in a few hours. If anyone, people are going to stay up, can watch that, because, of course, he'll probably talk about stuff like this. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, how have we got to the stage where we restrict speech? I don't understand it. And Americans, you're talking about how Americans, like, camaraderie of Europe. For a long time, like, you see yourself as better than Europe. And I agree. I think America is better than Europe, especially right now. For a long time, Europeans have been extremely sanctimonious about Americans. Just look at Piers Morgan. Like, we see you guys as... Oh, you dumb rednecks shooting guns, shooting black people, all that bullshit. Of course, I have immense respect for Americans, the patriotic ones like you, Frank, or some of my other American friends I speak with.
And I'll tell you something else, man. I especially when Matt is here, we love joking around about the UK and the French. But aside from that, I know. Who's out there. I've seen the people who are fighting for good things, and I know it's almost one of those things where, you know, I had this thing that came up, and I'll talk about it when we get off the line, because I don't want to make you just sit there and listen. But I really do respect all of the people who are starting to stand up and want something more, especially in Europe, because it's being, you guys, your natures are being taken advantage of. I would say that you guys, on the average, when you compare one hemisphere to the other, you guys are a lot more type B, a lot more low key, a lot more easygoing.
Oh, yeah.
We're a little bit more revved up. We're a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I see that as a good quality of Americans. You guys get upset. Could you imagine if something comparable to the scale of what happened in Rotherham? You've probably heard the name before. It's the town where I think it was 1,400 young girls over the course of 10 years were sexually exploited by migrant Muslim gangs, right? Mm-hmm. And one could even say this was an institutional abuse, because for a long time, the police, they more or less knew about it. The council more or less knew about it. They didn't prosecute the gangs because they were worried about being called racist. Could you imagine if something like that happened in the United States?
Oh, dude.
What would happen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you want to know something? It is happening in the United States in another in other ways. For example, this whole every town bullshit on Tumblr today with asking about gun control and all that stuff. My question to them, which of course went unanswered, is when the president gets up in front of the microphone a couple of months ago and to his own admission tells the world that 2/3 of yearly gun deaths are suicides and that the remaining 1/3 is mostly gang-related violence. And when you look at cities, that especially the ones like Chicago, Detroit, L.A., all the ones that have all the gun control lovers' dreamed legislations, how deadly the streets are and where the real death is happening, not only at just, you know, per capita deaths, but especially in the black community, that is just as a big suppression in the news as all of the sexual assaults in the U.S. And what is it to do? It is to protect the narrative. We've got Praetorian Guard media out here protecting this not only this president, but his entire movement.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of works both ways. Americans, the bad ones, I could say, the ones you and I disagree with, like these social justice pieces of shit in college and university.
Well, they're not even Americans. They reject the notion of America. Yeah. So, I mean, fine, you're not American. They're not Americans.
But these kinds of people, like the sort of that interrupted Milo's the poll thing, that wouldn't happen in the UK because we're too low key about this sort of thing. You won't get a feminist or Black Lives Matter person punching you in the face or anything like that. No, instead of just ban your talk. So, but if I had to choose between low-key or American bravado and enthusiasm, I'd go for American every time. Because I admire so much about America. Like the Second Amendment, for a long time, I didn't understand it. And then, I don't know, one day it just clicked for me.
Yeah.
I understood how the government cannot be trusted, and at some point it might get to the point where armed revolution is necessary. I mean, that's a very foreign concept, I think, to most non-Americans, but I understood it at one point.
Luke, Mao, thank you so much for calling in, man. This is a great time. This is a great call. I hope you call in more often now.
Can I? All right. Before I go, I just want to ask one thing to you and the others, because my last... This is to do with I'm gathering information about America and American exceptionalism.
Okay.
And because I want to, in my last essay or exam of the year, there's a possibility of a question about asking me whether America is exceptional come up, and I'd want to be prepared for that. Do you have any names, any ideas, or like of things I could read to get some arguments or ideas from?
The Federalist Papers.
Okay,
the Federalist Papers. Right before, this is actually something, it's funny to ask because it's something I'm reading into right now that I'm rereading, but the Federalist Papers were a set of papers that were written by John Jay, Alexander Hamilton, and I believe John Jay, Alexander Hamilton, and who was the third? Shit! Well, in either case, they all wrote under the name Publius, and what it was a series of letters that were published to help along the public understand what was being sold in this new Constitution, because they're moving away from the Articles of Confederation and they're trying desperately for nationhood, and American exceptionalism was something that was very, very was very prevalent right there in the first part, and not so much in the way that it was our founders thought that we were better than the rest of the world. They knew that this was an exceptional idea.
Experiment. Founded on philosophy, sort of almost, like these philosophical principles.
Totally, totally. And you know, a book, he's a polarizing figure, Glenn Beck. But and I don't listen to him that often, but I do like listening to him every once in a while. And there's been two books that I bought from him, and because I like the work that he, much like Alex Jones and InfoWars, I don't like dropping their names, but I like some of the work that comes out of their camps. And if you wanted a book to check out, which I am almost in the middle of right now, that I think is really, really great, it's called The Original Argument by Glenn Beck. And it pretty much, it takes all of the Federalist Papers, which I think there's about, you know, 70 or 80 of them, and mostly written by Alexander Hamilton. And pretty much it takes the papers themselves and translates them into 21st century lingo and what it actually meant.
All right.
So I think that you're going to find a lot of good stuff there.
Also, I don't know, a question of like, I also want to tackle like, why did America not have socialism develop? Because the way our course is taught, it became very obvious to me that the people teaching it seem to be quite like socialist and, oh, American socialism never developed because oppression, and not because just because of success, like people actually getting success. Do you know any arguments or offers who talk about American success like that, or
that talk? You mean earlier, earlier?
Like the market revolution, like colonial to 1900s times, sort of like where. I don't know. Just American, the success of capitalism.
Well, you know, I would always refer to people like Milton Friedman.
Okay.
I would definitely, you know, he actually talks he actually brings up the industrial booms of the late 19th century, post Reconstruction a lot. So it's not only does he talk about philosophy and why the market always regulates itself and what the differences between capitalism and socialism really are and how he just destroys people with perfect calm and civility, which I think is the most intriguing and endearing part of his presentation. But you will get specific quotes and talks out of him in actually very specifically to 1800s, late 19th century economics here in the U.S.
Thanks. That's perfect. All right. So, thanks for having me on.
Dude,
keep doing what you're doing.
Call in anytime, man. This is your show, too.
Okay.
Take care, brother.
All right.
Oh, shit. I cut him off again. Hey, Matt has joined us. What's going on, Matt? Happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day, bro.
Yeah, we're talking about Europe and American exceptionalism and I was talking about
American exceptionalism and European socialism.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, indeed. But you know what I wanted to bring up was this. It came up in mind with Mao on the phone. Now, and we only have a couple of minutes left in the show, so I'm just going to put this out there. Over the weekend, on Saturday, hold on a second. God damn it. Over the weekend on Saturday, I was tagged in something by our good friend Midas, Anarchy in Black. And I want to try to find this. Hold on. Okay, so Midas, of course, like many of our friends, are anarcho-capitalists. Okay, they believe in stateless society, and they outline very, very well what a stateless society would look like in terms of contracts and self-defense, national defense, or whether it be, you know, local defense, contracting with people and all that stuff. You know, just pretty much what a world outside of what we have here is. And I was tagged in this, and Anarchy in Black goes on in depth. I wish I could read all this, but it's a long, long post. And he goes on in depth about, you know, why people in a stateless society would not be inclined to betray people they have contracts with, to team up with others to try to take over a town or have some kind of ill will or screw over a consumer somehow. Because, of course, there's reputations, there's a lot of different things to uphold that you have to carry with you in life. And you have to be very, very careful how you conduct yourself because it will go and result in negative or positive consequences. Okay? But here's what I wanted to say, because in my response to all this stuff, these arguments for stateless society is something that I think that even people like Mao will appreciate. So here's my response verbatim. I definitely don't have the strength to respond in great length, but I really enjoyed this thread's detail and civility. I'll reblog it after this, too, so you guys can read it. Here's what I will say, being one of those, I don't know, constitutionalist people with libertarian leanings. Anarchy in Black's math checks out, and the logic is sound. The acknowledgement of a myriad of reasons that players in the market, both consumer and service providers, would have for accepting, declining, and rebelling against rate hikes, contractual reneging, betrayal, collusion, etc., was also well stated. But whereas I would be able to live on Anarchy Island with all of you in perfect peace and stateless tranquility, I too do not see a place for the implementation of these ideas in the modern world, unless we come face to face with Stephen King's Captain Trips, completely start over with 5% of humanity left over. But since I generally don't like dealing with humanity-killing scenarios to reach a desired state, I look at the most feasible scenario to get as close to that life as possible. And our Constitution is the most feasible. The best thing about the Constitution is that it has already been ratified. So the task at hand is, for me at least, to be an advocate for restoration of what we already have, which would be damn close to a stateless society compared to where we are now and toward which direction people would like to take us further, as opposed to spending time making a case for a society that does not have a chance. Okay, if you guys want to win debates and see who wins and whose logic wins out, the well-thought-out anarchist will win. But, you know, it almost comes to the point of feels over reels. What's really going to happen? Then I finish up with this. I mean, look at the kind of government that people are actively campaigning for today, and what the shrill rabble on college campuses want to do with even our ability to speak freely. Are these the people who would throw their vote toward the end of taxation and big government? Absolutely not. Better yet, would the current crop of Americans we're living with right now re-ratify the Constitution of 1791 if given a chance? Absolutely not. So like I said, I love the discourse, and it makes me confident to come to all of my friends on the internet to test the logic of pretty much any subject. But whereas the stateless world has been laid out before me always pleases my innermost political desires, I believe in the reasoning that the framers of our country proposed initially. And that's really what it comes down to. Think about that. We can be philosophical about this, but think about who we're living with right now. Think about what we already have on the books. The Constitution is not a fringe document. It's actually the center. Society has become fringe. Look at how far left both of the presumed parties are. Look at how far left that the Constitution's all the way over here, and everybody thinks it's fringe. You think that would ever get passed again? That's the reason why I align myself with the restoration of what we already have. Because it's a blessing that we have it. If this thing had to be re-ratified every 10 to 50 years, we would be fucked. It would be gone, and this would not be the United States anymore. Even though some people would be like, that's a good thing. Oh, God, it's so hot in here. So goddamn hot.
Milk was a bad choice.
Milk was a bad choice. I'm completely alone? No, I'm completely something, San Diego. What do you say?
I'm completely miserable. I don't know. I don't remember. It was so Brick. Damn hot.
My sweet Brick.
I'm in a class case of emotion. The bad man punted Baxter.
We've got fans here. Rumble and Roar and Nikki, they want to get me fans and ice cream. I'm in a glass case of emotion, Rumble says as well. We have two ceiling fans over here, but the problem is that we have no window air conditioners, which will be coming, so... Hey, it's
George
all right.
Washington never used an air conditioner.
You're right. And that's why Congress still has summer breaks. Because
they
didn't
take break during the summer.
Yes, they did.
George Washington worked. Ben Franklin worked.
Congress took a break during the summer because it was too hot to convene inside. That's why it's actually that's why we have summer break. It's just tradition. They all went home to do their own thing. Were all those men, those sweaty freaks sitting in a room, sweating?
They were all there secretly.
Through their knickers?
During the summer.
They're ass all there sweat. Can you imagine the swamp ass of Benjamin Franklin?
He didn't. Come on. You really on. Think that really they didn't have they something to cool the room down? Ben Franklin thought about it, bro.
Like what?
I don't know. Maybe they put a bag of fucking ice in front of the window. I don't know.
That's
the
right.
Breeze hit it and it cooled it off.
It's exactly, you know. Yeah. That's what somebody
fucking
is brilliant.
Block of ice.
That's what the brilliance of Ben Franklin would have came up with, too. You know what I'm thinking? What? Well, what are you thinking?
He's
I'm
got
thinking.
Italian accent.
Yeah, Ben Franklin. It's late 18th century, and Ben Franklin goes, you know what I'm thinking? We don't have to take a fucking summer break if we put a bag of ice in the window. So when the wind comes through the window, it'll actually get cooled down. You know what I'm fucking saying?
George Washington, good fucking idea, bro.
Patrick Henry's like, that's a good fucking idea. He's got a fucking point on this one. All right, guys. That's it. The ass sweat of freedom. We'll see you all tomorrow night on, quite frankly, the Wednesday night edition. Thursday night I will not be on. It'll be the last regular season game of the Little League season. So, everybody, take care of yourselves. Coming up next is Broken Filter Live, followed by the 9 o'clock showing of the Sweaties at Alta, New York. So just keep ZenLive.tv open at the tab in your browser and watch all these beautiful podcasts get recorded live and interactive right here on ZenLive.tv. Be well, motherfuckers.